We're starting a show now called The Mystic Pete Chronicles, and I'm Mystic Pete. Every week, through interviews with thought leaders, visionaries, and creatives, and stories, music, and humor, we'll do some deep ponders in this time of great change, and have some fun. If you'd like more information about today's guests, or to be interviewed for the show yourself, I'm at mysticpete.com. Tonight, Halloween show. We start the evening, as always, with a story by the extraordinary Mike Bone called Bats. Then a couple of tunes I produced, Halloween Night and Bad Kill. I read three stories, two by Edgar Allan Poe, The Tell-Tale Heart and The Raven, and one of my own, My Biggest Fear. And we have a lot of fun Halloween music. Stay tuned.
Mom worked at Davison's department store on Cherry Street in Macon, selling children's shoes for 2 years. She saved her money, and in the summer of 1959, we set out for California in a six-cylinder Bel Air Chevrolet four-door sedan. The traveling party included Mom, my older sister Joyce, myself, and a neighbor lady, Mrs. Aiken. Mrs. Aiken was a widow woman and a member of Avondale Baptist Church. She had children in California, and we were delivering her to spend the summer with her daughters and her grandchildren. We headed west via New Orleans. We stopped there on Bourbon Street. Baptists don't drink, but there's nothing wrong with watching other people make a fool of themselves consuming the devil's vomit. Texas was a bore until we got to the Alamo. Then it was a giant bore until we got to New Mexico. When we got to New Mexico, things changed dramatically. Indian villages, the Painted Desert, the Petrified Forest, and then Carlsbad Caverns. We toured all of these places, with Carlsbad being late in the day. The caverns were amazing. Stalactites, stalagmites, places that looked like curtains, all amazing to a 10-year-old from Macon that had never been inside a cave. As we were leaving the tour of the cave, one of the guys mentioned that he was giving a talk about the bats that lived in the cave. We stayed and listened to his little presentation. There were probably 75 people seated on the walls that lined the pathway at the entrance into the cavern. The park ranger told us about the number of mosquitoes that a bat can eat in a night. Tons of flying insects that the Carlsbad bat colony consumes every night, and the positive impact bats have on agriculture in the area. About 10 minutes after the end of the speech, we saw a little fluttering way down in the cave. Just a few bats were spiraling counterclockwise to gain altitude needed to exit the cavern. The bats could not fly straight out as the angle was too steep. The first bats were followed by lots of other bats, thousands of other bats, hundreds of thousands of other bats. Soon the air in the opening of Carlsbad Caverns looked like a tornado of bats. Within a few minutes, the first bats to exit were at an altitude where they can peel off the bat tornado and fly out across the desert. Contrary to popular belief, not one woman got a bat stuck in her hair. There were hundreds of thousands of opportunities for that to occur. There were small animals that sat on the opposite side of the cavern entrance from the humans. The wall was very steep there. The bats would fly close to the wall, and these animals would reach out, grab a bat, and chow down. Bats for dinner. Yum. This was my first bat experience. Years go by. I knew I wanted bats on my farm in Georgia. Cousin Wayne, who spent 43 years at Flint Energy, called one day to ask if I wanted some 30-foot tall steel poles. It seemed that Flint Energy was changing out some poles and the old ones were going to be thrown away. Yes, absolutely. Cousin Wayne got a trailer full of these poles delivered to the farm for free. I started constructing bat boxes in California. I had to do it because my father had changed cosmic address years ago. In his honor, I built them in his style, overbuilding wherever possible. I shipped the bat boxes to Georgia. On my next trip to the farm, Wayne and I delivered four sets of two poles to different locations around the farm. We attached the boxes to the poles. It pays to know people. After 43 years at Flint Energy, Cousin Wayne knows almost anyone that does anything regarding the transmission of power in Central Georgia. Somehow or another, a Digger Derrick truck shows up at the farm on a Saturday, and in a matter of a few hours, all poles were set. We had 13 bat boxes on 8 poles. Now we wait. It took 2 years for the bats to find the boxes, but once they did, they moved in and started doing what bats do, eating mosquitoes, breeding, and pooping. Small amounts of bat poop would build up around the bases of the poles. Wayne's wife, Cousin Lynn, her flower beds were the beneficiary of the bats' hard work and digestive tract. 8 years have passed, and now I'm upgrading the boxes. My friend, Bat Box Paul, is a great woodworker. In human terminology, the bats will be moving from the existing boxes into the new boxes, basically moving from Holiday Inns to W Hotels. Better bat boxes for better bats. So, bats carry rabies. That's true. Bats are mammals. As a matter of fact, they're the only flying mammal. Most mammals are capable of carrying rabies. Very few cases of bats actually giving rabies to humans in the United States. If you don't want to risk it, don't pick up a bat. Bats caused COVID-19. There is some truth to this. The research indicates that bats may have transmitted COVID-19 to an animal called a pangolin in China. Some Chinese eat pangolins, an endangered species, for medicinal purposes. There is some poetic justice to the idea that someone would eat an endangered species for health purposes only to contract coronavirus. There are also cases of people eating bats. I would assume that if you cook bat well enough, it would kill the coronavirus. So, no bat tartar for you.
Spiders and sliders and headless horse riders creaking and shrieking under your bed. Horny toad lizards and green chicken gizzards, the oddest things turn up dead. Creepers and reapers and whimpering weepers, a loud shocking knock.
Defy the master's rules, and you two will walk without a limp.
push up the garden flowers. Bad kill, bad kill. You're hanging around here still. Bad kill, bad kill. Pray for the good and the ill. Bad kill, bad kill. Time to pay the bill. Bad kill, bad kill. Swallow and take the pill.
My Biggest Fear by Mystic Pete. Fear. Mind-numbing, paralyzing fear. Panic. Hysteria. I should probably reserve this confession for a therapy session, but I'm going to publicly declare on radio my deepest fear. Ready? Like a lot of guys with creeping male pattern baldness, I have a few options. Tonsure, like Woody Harrelson, Jude Law, or my dad. Nah. Comb over, like you know who. And no way. So I shave it. Like a lot of guys, I don't thrill over self-grooming and can get away with buzzing my hair myself about every 2 weeks. That's all of 30 minutes from shave to cleanup spent on my hair total a couple of times a month. Happy! About my fear. I don't panic over spiders or snakes or even economic collapse, world-ending meteors, plagues, or my own death. My biggest worry is there being a power outage when I'm in the middle of shaving my head and being stuck with uneven spiky nubbins up top for days. Actually, the deep primal fear is that the end of the world starts happening while I'm shaving my head. The electricity goes out permanently, and that's it. I'm stuck with the most awful haircut possible in the middle of the apocalypse. That's why you'll find me, during my twice-monthly head buzz, clipping my hair at a mad dash pace, sweating and frothing, trying to get things evened out before the zombies attack, and me looking like hell. Talk about a nightmare! There, my worst fear.
Would you like to see something strange?
Come with us and you will see. This our town of Halloween. This is Halloween, this is Halloween.
Pumpkins scream in the dead of night.
This is Halloween, everybody make a scene.
Trick or treat,
tell the neighbors on the diaphragm.
It's our town, everybody's free.
In this town of Halloween.
I am the one hiding under your bed. Teeth ground sharp and eyes glowing red.
I am the one hiding under your stairs. Fingers like snakes and spiders in my hair.
This is Halloween, this is Halloween. Halloween, 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 Halloween.
In this town we call home, everyone hail to the pumpkin song.
In this town, don't we love it now? Everybody's waiting for the next surprise.
Round that corner man hiding in the trash can. Something's waiting now to pounce and howl. You'll scream!
Hey, this is Halloween!
Red and black
and slimy green.
Aren't you scared?
Well, that's just fine.
Say it once, say it twice. Take a chance and roll the dice.
Ride with the moon in the dead of night.
Everybody scream! Everybody scream!
In our town of Halloween,
I am the clown with the tearaway face.
Here in a flash, Donovan Trace.
I am the who in the cold who's there.
Halloween, 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 Halloween,
Halloween, Halloween.
Tinderlumpkins everywhere. Life's no fun without a good scare.
That's our job,
but we're not mean
in our town of Halloween.
In this town,
don't we love it now?
Everyone's waiting for the next surprise.
Skeleton Jack might catch you in the back and
scream like a banshee, make you jump out of your skin.
This is Halloween, everybody scream.
Won't you please make way for a very special guy?
Woman Jack is king of the pumpkin patch. Everyone hail to the pumpkin king.
Now this is Halloween, this is Halloween, 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 Halloween.
This town we call home. Everyone hail to the pumpkin song.
The Tell-Tale Heart by Edgar Allan Poe, read by Mystic Pete. It's true. Yes, I have been ill. Very ill. But why do you say that I have lost control of my mind? Why do you say that I am mad? Can you not see that I have full control of my mind? Is it not clear that I am not mad? Indeed, the illness only made my mind, my feelings, my senses stronger, more powerful. My sense of hearing especially became more powerful. I could hear sounds I had never heard before. I heard sounds from heaven, and I heard sounds from hell. Listen, listen, and I will tell you how it happened. You will see. You will hear how healthy my mind is. It is impossible to say how the idea first entered my head. There was no reason for what I did. I did not hate the old man. I even loved him. He had never hurt me. I did not want his money. I think it was his eye. His eye was like the eye of a vulture, the eye of one of those terrible birds that watch and wait while an animal dies, and then fall upon the dead body and pull it to pieces to eat it. When the old man looked at me with his vulture eye, a cold feeling went up and down my back. Even my blood became cold. And so I finally decided I had to kill the old man and close that eye forever. So you think I am mad? A madman cannot plan. But you should have seen me. During all of that week, I was as friendly to the old man as I could be, and warm and loving. Every night around 12 o'clock, I slowly opened his door. And when the door was opened wide enough, I put my hand in, and then my head. In my hand, I held a light covered over with a cloth, so that no light showed. I stood there quietly. Then carefully, I lifted the cloth just a little so that a single, thin, small light fell across that eye. For 7 nights I did this. 7 long nights, every night at midnight. Always, the eye was closed, so it was impossible for me to do the work. For it was not the old man I felt I had to kill. It was the eye, his evil eye. And every morning I went to his room, and with a warm, friendly voice, I asked him how he had slept. He could not guess that every night, just at 12, I looked at him as he slept. The eighth night, I was more than usually careful as I opened the door. The hands of a clock move more quickly than did my hand. Never before had I felt so strongly my own power. I was now sure of success. The old man was lying there, not dreaming that I was at his door. Suddenly, he moved in his bed. You may think I became afraid, but no. The darkness of his room was thick and black. I knew he could not see the opening of the door. I continued to push the door, slowly, softly. I put in my head. I put in my hand with the covered light. Suddenly, the old man sat straight up in bed and cried, "Who's there?" I stood quite still. For a whole hour, I did not move, nor did I hear him again lie down in his bed. He just sat there, listening. Then I heard a sound, a low cry of fear which escaped from the old man. Now I knew he was sitting up in his bed, filled with fear. I knew that he knew that I was there. He did not see me there. He could not hear me there. He felt me there. Now he knew that death was standing there. Slowly, little by little, I lifted the cloth until a small, small light escaped from under it to fall upon that vulture eye. It was open, wide, wide open, and my anger increased as it looked straight at me. I could not see the old man's face, only the eye, that hard blue eye, and the blood in my body like ice. Have I not told you that my hearing had become unusually strong? Now I could hear a quick, low, soft sound, like the sound of a clock heard through a wall. It was the beating of the old man's heart. I tried to stand quickly, but the sound grew louder. The old man's fear must have been great indeed, and as the sound grew louder, my anger became greater and more painful. But it was more than anger. In the quiet night, in the dark silence of the bedroom, my anger became fear, for the heart was beating so loudly that I was sure someone must hear. The time had come. I rushed into the room, crying, "Die! Die!" The old man gave a loud cry of fear as I fell upon him and held the bed covers tightly over his head. Still his heart was beating, but I smiled as I felt that success was near. For many minutes that heart continued to beat, but at last the beating stopped. The old man was dead. I took away the bed covers and held my ear over his heart. There was no sound. Yes, he was dead. Dead as a stone. His eye would trouble me no more. So I am mad, you say? You should have seen how careful I was to put the body where no one could find it. At first I cut off the head, then the arms and legs. I was careful not to let a single drop of blood fall on the floor. I pulled up three of the boards that formed the floor and put the pieces of the body there. Then I put the boards down again, carefully, so carefully that no human eye could see that they had been moved. As I finished this work, I heard that someone was at the door. It was now 4 o'clock in the morning, but still dark. I had no fear, however, as I went down to open the door. Three men were at the door, three officers of the police. One of the neighbors had heard the old man's cry and had called the police. These three had come to ask questions and to search the house. I asked the policeman to come in. The cry, I said, was my own, in a dream. The old man, I said, was away. He had gone to visit a friend in the country. I took them through the whole house, telling them to search it all, to search well. I led them finally into the old man's bedroom. As if playing a game with them, I asked them to sit down and talk for a while. My easy, quiet manner made the policeman believe my story. So they sat talking with me in a friendly way. But although I answered them in the same way, I soon wished that they would go. My head hurt, and there was a strange sound in my ears. I talked more and faster. The sound became clearer, and still they sat and talked. Suddenly, I knew that the sound was not in my ears. It was not just inside my head. At that moment, I must have become quite white. I talked still faster and louder, and the sound, too, became louder. It was a quick, low, soft sound, like the sound of a clock heard through a wall, a sound I knew well. Louder it became, and louder. Why did the men not go? Louder, louder. I stood up and quickly walked around the room. I pushed my chair across the floor to make more noise to cover that terrible sound. I talked even louder, and still the men sat and talked and smiled. Was it possible that they could not hear? No, they heard. I was certain of it. They knew. Now it was they who were playing a game with me. I was suffering more than I could bear from their smiles, from that sound. Louder, louder, louder. Suddenly I could bear it no longer. I pointed at the boards and cried, "Yes, yes, I killed him. Pull up the boards and you shall see. I killed him. But why does his heart not stop beating? Why does it not stop?"
Thank you. friendly ghost, the friendliest ghost you know. Though grown-ups might look at him with fright, the children all love him so. Casper, the friendly ghost, he couldn't be bad or mean. He'll romp and play, sing and dance all day, the friendliest ghost you've seen.
He always says hello, and he's really glad to meet ya.
Wherever he may go,
he's kind to every living creature. Grown-ups don't understand why children love him the most, but kids all know that he loves them so. Casper the Friendly Ghost.
In the woods there grew a tree, and a fine, fine tree was he. And on that tree there was a limb, and on that limb there was a branch, and on that branch there was a nest, and in that nest there was an egg, and in that egg there was a bird, and from that bird a feather came, and of that feather was a bear. On that bed there was a girl, and on that girl there was a man, and from that man there was a seed, and from that seed there was a boy, and from that boy there was a man, and for that man there was a grave, and from that grave there grew a tree.
And from that seed there was a boy, and from that boy there was a man, and from that man there was a grave, and from that grave there grew a tree.
To pay attention to me. Now, Daisy, will you tell us what it is, please, that the maypole represents?
Mr. Rose, I know.
All right, then, anybody.
Phallic symbol.
The phallic symbol. That is correct.
Mystic Pete Chronicles. So after my story, My Biggest Fear, we heard This is Halloween, from the soundtrack of Tim Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas. Then, The Telltale Heart. Then the theme song from the classic show called The Twilight Zone. That was John Williams and the Boston Pops Orchestra. After that, the theme from The Munsters with Billy Strange. Then the theme from The Addams Family. And then Casper the Friendly Ghost. And then a selection from the movie called The Wicker Man, the original from 1973. Next, Dance Macabre by Saint-Saëns, and then The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe.
Thank you.
The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe. Read by Mystic Pete. Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered weak and weary, over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping, rapping at my chamber door. "'Tis some visitor," I muttered, tapping at my chamber door. "Only this, and nothing more." Odd, distinctly, I remember it was in the bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. Eagerly I wished the morrow. Vainly I had sought to borrow from my books surcease of sorrow, sorrow for the lost Lenore. For the rare and radiant maiden whom the angels named Lenore, nameless here forevermore. And the silken, sad, uncertain rustling of each purple curtain thrilled me, filled me with fantastic terrors never felt before, so that now, to still the beating of my heart, I stood repeating, "'Tis some visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door. Some late visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door. That it is, and nothing more." Presently my soul grew stronger, hesitating then no longer. "Sir," said I, "or madam, truly your forgiveness I implore, but the fact is I was napping, and so gently you came rapping, and so faintly you came tapping, tapping at my chamber door, that I scarce was sure I heard you." Here I opened wide the door. Darkness there, and nothing more. Deep into that darkness peering, long I stood there wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming dreams no mortal ever dared to dream before. But the silence was unbroken, and the stillness gave no token, and the only word there spoken was the whispered word, "Lenore." This I whispered, and an echo murmured back the word, "Lenore." Merely this, and nothing more. Back into the chamber turning, all my soul within me burning, soon again I heard a tapping, somewhat louder than before. "Surely," said I, "surely that is something at my window lattice. Let me see then what thereat is, and this mystery explore. Let my heart be still a moment, and this mystery explore. 'Tis the wind, and nothing more." Open here I flung the shutter, when, with many a flirt and flutter, in there stepped a stately raven of the saintly days of yore. Not the least obeisance made he, not a minute stopped or stayed he, but with mien of lord or lady, perched above my chamber door, perched upon a bust of Pallas just above my chamber door, perched and sat, and nothing more. Then this ebony bird beguiling my sad fancy into smiling, by the grave and stern decorum of the countenance it wore, "Though thy crest be shorn and shaven, thou," I said, "art sure no craven, ghastly, grim, and ancient raven, wandering from the nightly shore? Tell me what thy lordly name is on the night's Plutonian shore." Quoth the raven, "Nevermore." Much I marveled this ungainly fowl to hear discourse so plainly, though its answer little meaning, little relevancy bore. For we cannot help agreeing that no living human being ever yet was blessed with seeing bird above his chamber door. Bird or beast upon the sculptured bust above his chamber door, with such name as "Nevermore." But the raven, sitting lonely on the placid bust, spoke only that one word, as if his soul in that one word he did outpour. Nothing further then he uttered, not a feather then he fluttered, till I scarcely more than muttered, "Other friends have flown before. On the morrow he will leave me as my hopes have flown before." Then the bird said, "Nevermore." Startled at the stillness broken by reply so aptly spoken, "Doubtless," said I, "what it utters is its only stock and store, caught from some unhappy master whose unmerciful disaster followed fast and followed faster till his songs one burden bore, till the dirges of his hope that melancholy burden bore, oh, never, never more." But the raven, still beguiling my sad fancy into smiling, straight I wheeled a cushioned seat in front of bird and bust and door. Then upon the velvet sinking, I betook myself to linking fancy unto fancy, thinking what this ominous bird of yore, what this grim, ungainly, ghastly, gaunt, and ominous bird of yore meant in croaking nevermore. This I sat engaged in guessing, but no syllable expressing to the fowl whose fiery eyes now burned into my bosom's core. This and more I sat divining, with my head at ease reclining on the cushion's velvet lining that the lamplight gloated o'er, but whose velvet violet lining with the lamplight gloating o'er, she shall press, ah, nevermore. Then methought the air grew denser, perfumed from an unseen censer, swung by seraphim whose footfalls tinkled on the tufted floor. "Wretched," I cried, "thy God has lent thee, by these angels he has sent thee, respite, respite, and nepenthe from thy memories of Lenore. Quaff, oh quaff this kind nepenthe, and forget this lost Lenore." Quoth the raven, "Nevermore." "Prophet," said I, "thing of evil, prophet," said I, "if bird or devil, whether tempter sent, or whether tempest tossed thee here ashore, desolate yet all undaunted, on this desert land enchanted, on this home by horror haunted, tell me truly, I implore, is there balm of Gilead? Tell me, tell me, I implore." Quoth the raven, "Nevermore." "Prophet," said I, "thing of evil, prophet still, if bird or devil, by that heaven that bends above, by that God we both adore, tell the soul with sorrow laden if within the distant Aden it shall clasp a sainted maiden whom the angels named Lenore, clasp a rare and radiant maiden whom the angels named Lenore." Quoth the raven, "Nevermore." "Be that word our sign in parting, bird or fiend," I shrieked, upstarting, "get thee back into the tempest and the night's Plutonian shore. Leave no black plume as a token of that lie thy soul has spoken. Leave my loneliness unbroken. Quit thy bust above my door. Take thy beak from out my heart, and take thy form from off my door." Quoth the raven, "Nevermore." And the raven, never flitting, still is sitting on the pallid bust of Pallas just above my chamber door. And his eyes have all the seeming of a demons, that is dreaming. And the lamplight over him streaming throws his shadow on the floor. And my soul, from out that shadow that lies floating on the floor, shall be lifted nevermore. We are coming to the end of a show called The Mystic Pete Chronicles. If you'd like to contact me, you can find me at mysticpete.com. We started the show tonight with a story by the extraordinary Mike Bone called Bats, played a couple of tunes that I produced, Halloween Night and Bad Kill, stories by Edgar Allan Poe, The Telltale Heart, The Raven, and one by me, My Biggest Fear, and a bunch of great Halloween music. Thanks so much for listening. Mystic Pete out!